altitude's undefeated.
Crap, rainbow, punch it up, whatever it was in.
Not a huge salmon,
I don't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and starting to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure.
Hello, Rapids fans. You're listening to Holding the High Line. My name is Matt Pollard. Happy New Year. It is officially, by the time you're recording this, it will be in 2024. So hopefully going back to work, going back to school, nursing, whatever you may have did in excess on December 31st was not too crazy. But I know we said that we were done with 2023, but I think it's time, given the timeline of events that have happened since last time Mark and I podcasted, for us to put a proper bow on this bizarro, ridiculous season and then just never speak of 2023 ever again. And to do that with me, joining for possibly his final act as his current role at the Denver Post, Brendan Plone. Brendan, hi. Happy New Year.
Howdy, Matt. How are you, my friend? I am in, I guess this would be extra time of the full-time whistle is looming for my time at the Post. I filed my final two stories. I am proud that my fourth and or fifth cap of Holding the High Line will be my, we're in extra time, full-time whistle is looming, and I'm happy to break down what we've got on the show tonight.
Yeah, so Brendan and I were chatting, folks, about this. First, I should say this was an unplanned episode, and some of our best content does come when someone has a recommendation. That can come from a highliner, that can come from someone who's wanted to come on the show, that can come from someone else in the Rapids, Colorado soccer media space. So all of this, I'm giving the brainchild behind this idea was all Brendan's idea. So if this goes well, it is all on him. And if this goes horribly wrong and we delete this episode in 2 weeks, it is also all of Brendan's fault. But 2023 was a tumultuous year for the Rapids, but significant in so many interesting storylines that in the minutia, that is what Holding the High Line lives for. And then also from just a general soccer standpoint. And so I think it was worthwhile, given Brendan's post for the Denver Post, which I will link in the show notes for you, the top 10 Colorado soccer stories of 2023, from scandals to World Cup breakthroughs. Soccer in Colorado will always have its moment in the sun. That's the byline there from Mr. Plone. And so I think it was worthwhile of us talking about this and almost doing, like, not a debate of necessarily, Brendan, your top 10 stories, but an anthology of just the ridiculousness of what happened this season, both Rapids related and otherwise.
Absolutely. I mean, when we think about 2023, I mean, I wrote it the other day, just the amount of fans that will be so thankful the ball dropped into 2024 and say 2023 is done with, we're moving on, is going to be immense. But also, it's fair to reflect on the crazy year that was. And considering everything that happened from a statewide soccer landscape, I think it's important to note. And I also just love kind of just like reflecting back. I did this last year in 2022. And it was also just really fun to just reflect and like, oh my gosh, the amount of things that happen in the state on a yearly basis in the span of 12 months is outrageous. And when you think about it, whether it's Rapids, whether it's the women's soccer space, 2023 was, at least for me, it stands out as a year unlike any other, really, for the soccer community for so many reasons. And I cannot wait to break it down with you.
Yeah, so let's get into it, Brendan. So I'm going to say, listeners, that we are going to recap 2023. I realize that probably 47 to maybe 97% of you have already hit delete on this, but so yep. we're going to. I know Mark's not here, Brendan, and normally he is our He's our union rep to where Mark and I have to, you know, do our votes on something as far as HTHL legislation is concerned. But I think we can officially say the purpose of this podcast is to look back on 2023, bury the hatchet, and then never discuss this ever again. 2023 is dead, and we are burying it in, you know, we are, I'm totally fumbling with my words right now. We are going to, like, it was easier for, like, a maximum security jailbreak than it will be for 2023 to get out of the, you know, tomb that we are embalming it in, and then ceremonially and with dark magic, like, burying at the bottom of the ocean. Brendan, where do we want to start? I feel like there's so much rapid stuff, and I don't want that to consume all the time. So the biggest competition in world football for me still in 2023 has to be a World Cup, regardless of men's or women's soccer. So let us start on the WoSnow front, Brendan, where we kind of have this juxtaposition between several breakout and several breakout players within NWSL, that leading to more Colorado representation on the national team. Some of that are players that are becoming more elevated. Sophia Smith, I think she won the Golden Boot, at least for the women's national team at the World Cup, because they didn't score a whole lot of goals and she scored a bunch of them. Lindsay Horan was the co-captain alongside Alex Morgan, and there's no question that there's going to be Colorado representation here to stay on the women's national team. And then you tie that onto a bow with, hopefully, you're wearing the scarf here. This is an auditory podcast. You can't see Brendan wearing the scarf, listeners, but he has on a Fort Denver FC scarf. And so all of that kind of culminating, regardless of the failure of the women's national team down under, which for me did not come down to the Colorado players of finally now first division club soccer, hopefully coming to Colorado. And that's kind of that's one big kind of all encompassing flow chart, Brendan, of how we get there from what's going on. And I think WoSo deserves its moment in the sun, given how much the men's game has been frustrating for Colorado soccer fans this year.
Yeah, I'd say for me, hands down, the best part of 23 was covering the women's game, because, I mean, it's not every day that you get a local player captaining the women's national team at a World Cup. But for Colorado, it's the second time it's ever happened. April Heinrichs did it in 91. And then Sophia Smith, I mean, she was always poised to be this breakout player, but then when she did what she did against Vietnam and everything else, it was like, oh my gosh, we've got a world-class player who grew up in Windsor and is on the world stage. And it's crazy that it's all this is going on 2 weeks after the launch of Fort Denver FC by Lakewood native Jordan Angeli. I mean, the way that the city and really the state kind of rallied around them was amazing. But then if you think about it, Mal Swanson was probably going to be the third piece of that puzzle and in the attack, and she got injured in the final tune-up game ahead of the World Cup. You had Lauren Donaldson, who is led Jamaica at the Women's World Cup. He had so much joy. He helped them really reach the round 16, the first time a Caribbean nation ever did that. And so, and then all on top of it, it was like you had your normal NWSL players, which I think right now it stands at 18 from the state, just making their own way into the women's soccer scene. And to me, that's like really inspiring for the foundation of where at for Denver FC is at and where 2024 could be, which for me, I had the story of for Denver FC as my number four or number five slot. And in reality, if things could pick up in 2024, which it sounds like they will regarding the expansion front, I think that will be the number one story of 2024. If from the kind of the pace and trajectory that things are moving at, in an instant, Denver could be the next NWSL city, which would be massive.
I think the we'll go full circle on here, Brendan. So let's start from a youth movement standpoint. I think definitely the word is out about anybody who's working in the WOSO space absolutely knows about what's going on in Colorado. They know about Real Colorado. They know about Rush, what happens with Fort Denver FC's potential academy. We'll see. But if you compare it to like what Colorado does for athletes and the athletes that we produce on a population basis, you know, like we are, there are more people in Los Angeles County than there are in the state of Colorado. I don't know how many metropolises in the state of Texas have more. And so I remember there was a really good article from, I don't remember when this was, I don't remember which outlet it was. I think it was MLSsoccer.com. It might have been The Athletic, but basically they were looking at if you had MLS competitions between the best 11s of every single state, either based on where people went to college or where people were from and where they played youth soccer, not necessarily where they were born. California, Texas absolutely dominated. Florida was coming up there as well. And then I can't remember what they did in terms of the Terps and Maryland and everything. Brendan, Colorado doesn't have the numbers. We're not full on. I think this was a Jeff Reuter article because he 100% had he didn't have the goalkeeper field for Mississippi, but then he had Justin Mapp on all of the left-sided positions, and then he had Marlon Hairston on all of the right-sided positions. So on a per capita basis, Colorado is keeping up with in the soccer space. I think for the women's side and increasingly now on the men's side is doing that on a per capita basis. And I think the key thing now is we're producing elite level talent, and you see that that is not a function of just Sophia Smith being what she is. Or Lindsay Horan as well, that there is a girl right now at Colorado Rush, at Real Colorado, who will be at a UCLA, a Maryland. I'm not off the top of my head. I don't know as many of the blue bloods when it comes to the women's game. You know, one of those girls
Stanford
will.
And Santa Clara.
Okay. One of those girls who's, you know, 12 to 15 right now will get a D1 scholarship to UNC. We'll probably go win a national championship with the Tar Heels. We'll get drafted in the NWSL. We'll at some point play for or against for Denver FC in the stadium, and then we'll get called up and get at least one cap with the national team. I feel like that's a pretty safe thing to assume. And so I think now we're seeing that grassroots approach to where it's obvious and that hotbed is out there. And you compare that, Brendan, to say how recruiting has gone in the men's game and how it's not that Southampton or that Brentford or that Brighton and Hove Albion were doing anything revolutionary. They were just doing it better with a better level of efficiency and looking in places that other clubs and markets weren't necessarily looking at. We had a conversation with Warwick Smith, Mark, maybe Brendan, excuse me. This could have been 6 months ago. This could have been a year and a half ago. I can't remember. And he said that, and it was one of the South American countries. It was like, it was Peru or Ecuador. I couldn't remember which. And he was saying that like, that's now been found out about, you know, like the French second division has scouts that are scouting those clubs, and they have analytics on those players, and they've got a short list of targets, and they're going after a guy based domestically in Ecuador as well. And so in that same sense, Colorado has now found out. UCLA, the Texas Schools, the East Coast Blue Bloods and everything. The ACC is absolutely scouting for both men's and women's, scouting soccer players there. I think increasingly now those players are going to get respect when it comes to the NWSL. And certainly as we see from their culture and then from also their athleticism, which is still a component that I think is going to be important to the women's national team, though we do need to get better technically on the ball. And I don't know that on a per player basis that Colorado's youth system is creating those players necessarily, is that is going to continue. And that now leads to, I don't know, you tell me, Brendan, to where are we now going to see, is there going to be more respect paid to the preps beat on that from a women's standpoint when it comes to recruiting or potentially even a high school player getting a shout with the youth national team? I think it's an interesting question. Anything you want to say about that, Brendan, or can I wax poetically about Lauren Donaldson?
Let's move on.
So, listeners, I don't know. Honestly, I had no idea who this guy was until Brendan told me about him, and then Brendan wrote the article, and you probably should know about it. Lauren Donaldson, originally from Jamaica, had a very short senior career based mostly in the States. According to his Wikipedia page, he was with the Denver Kickers. I don't know if that was an indoor team. I don't know what was going on. According to his Wikipedia page, he had one cap for the Foxes in 1997. That immediately makes him a legend in my eyes. And then he had assistance experiences in with the Foxes and then also with the Rapids as well. Most recently, he was with the Jamaican women's national team, the Reggae Girls, as they're called. Led them to obviously their best achievement that they've ever had when it comes to a competition on the senior women's side, and he's now most recently been appointed the new head coach of Chicago Red Stars. So he obviously has Colorado connections. So not only is Colorado becoming more relevant, I think, from a national team and domestically and even internationally when it comes to the youth development standpoint on women's soccer. Brandon, you'll have to tell me if the Lady Buffs have done anything relevant to know whether or not we are relevant from a okay.
Yeah. Taylor Korniak, who was on the U.S. women's national team. She was just so close on making the World Cup squad. She's a national teamer. She plays for San Diego. She went to CU. They've had a couple draft picks as well. Savannah Coleman, who was with them last, well, I guess two falls ago now. She was just a rookie in the NWSL this year. So, but yeah, real quick on Lorne. He's the president of Rail Colorado. He developed the likes of Sophia Smith, Jalen Howell, Mal Swanson. I mean, shoot. And how many ever Coloradans are in the NWSL and happen to play for Real? I mean, he's going to be reunited with two former players in Chicago that he previously coached at Real. So yeah, he started his coaching career at Metro State. So like, he's a Denver and Colorado coaching legend, and arguably one of the best youth coaches in the country. And now he'll be in Chicago, and he's at 68, but this is his first pro women's club coaching career opportunity, which is wild. And the guy, he has so much joy and just so much passion for it. Hands down, the happiest story I reported during the World Cup was just him leading Jamaica. I talked to Woldy Harris, the Rapids assistant, and yeah, said the same thing. Just coaches with so much joy, is really attacking, just lets his girls kind of play, and boom, Jamaica. Round 16 berth. Amazing. So yeah, hands down. Great story.
So I think that speaks to another component, Brendan, where obviously I say this as a transplant who just celebrated my 8th anniversary of moving here to another transplant, who I do a podcast with someone who is a transplant who moved here and then also moved away from Colorado. I think now there's enough of a network and enough going on in terms of not only the players coming out of Colorado, but what Colorado is doing from a soccer standpoint, to now then people that have connections that do stuff in this space that aren't necessarily from Colorado or don't necessarily stay here are also becoming influential people in the space. Certainly, I think Lauren Donaldson is a representation of that. I still think it's going to be hard, Brendan, from a college soccer level. I say this on both the men's and the women's level, for Colorado to maybe punch above its weight, just given where geographically the sport is going. Brendan, I'm going to assume the Buffs, all of their programs are moving back to the Big 12. Is that correct? Or is it just football?
Yes.
Yeah. So functionally in that regard, with my limited understanding, well, what's happening to Pac-12 soccer now? I can't keep up with all the college football stuff.
We're still
a relatively isolated geographic state. We don't have any one of the major blue bloods. And, you know, it's one major Power 5 school, if you're talking about CU, and then TBD on what happens with the Mountain West or what's going on with CSU, Denver Post Rapids beat reporter elect Braden maybe has some insight on that. And then DU is capable of doing certain things, Brendan, but like, for DU to maybe raise up its level, like, we're gonna have to talk about it winning a national championship and then doing something off of that. So college soccer is still going to be episodic and probably down to individuals, not necessarily constantly churning out players in ways that, regardless of what happens to Pac-12 soccer or what is going on with that, UCLA in 10, 15 years' time is still going to be a powerhouse. Maryland could go independent in college soccer and still get elite talent and do everything. I'm willing to bet that at some point in the next 5 years, there's going to be a Virginia center back or D-mid who gets drafted out of MLS and is immediately a starter and is fantastic for his team as well. So those things are a little bit more entrenched. But I think where this really comes full circle is for Denver FC getting on the board and being a and really being a change agent. I don't know that we've seen. I think Wave did it. I've done a little bit in terms of the expansion, but I'm not sure that I don't know that we've seen the same bump or impact in raising of the level from NWSL expansion teams as we have from MLS expansion teams. Some of that comes down to infrastructure. The spending's different. They're completely different leagues and effectively completely different markets. But, you know, I don't know that, you know, 5-6 years looking on it afterwards that Orlando Pride have had the same impact on the NWSL in ways that Orlando City has. And I feel like NWSL Denver, if they get the right location, if they get the right stadium situation, if they get figure out stuff from an ownership standpoint, and then
if maybe, they get the bid.
Let's start with I could see where, given how much hype there is around Denver, given how much hype there is around what ownership is happening. I've spoken to so many people, the Equalizer, who talk about, you know, they go through and they do their media stuff either on Media Day or for NWSL Cup or where everybody's in the same place and they're just asking a bunch of rapid fire questions. And the number one market that everybody wanted to see in NWSL was Denver. Players are going to play here. They're going to move here. All these things. Brandon's making a face. He didn't know this. Yeah, everybody wants an expansion team in Denver, listeners. So I could see where that moves the needle from NW. So I'll amend my previous statement. I do think Angel City have moved the needle and their connection with LAFC, certainly.
And Kansas City with their new stadium.
Yes.
That's also the second iteration of Kansas City.
Yeah, so I wouldn't count that in the same. We're starting fresh from this standpoint, Brendan, and we're also starting fresh in a market where there's more of a swell up like we've seen from the from some of the MLS markets as well. And so I think that will see WOSO come full circle in terms of every tier of the pyramid and then really having a platform to then represent and show the different that WOSO has made. Last thing that I'll say on this, Brendan, then we can move on, or if you've got something else to say, you can. My one concern that I have with this, listeners, I did some reporting on the town halls that the Rapids were doing earlier. And one thing that didn't make it into the piece because it wasn't super relevant, but I've gotten on pretty good authority from several people who were at several different of those meetings. At one point, NWSL comes up and they ask about what, and the company that was doing it was asking Rapid season ticket holders what they would think about that or what they would want to see from it. And one of the questions that was posited in several, I don't know all of if it was in all of those meetings, was their likelihood to support it if KSC was involved. And overwhelming, like, when Rapid season ticket holders are like, I want nothing to do with an NWSL team if KSE is involved because I know that they're going to ruin it. Like, that was a standout moment for me, or a standout takeaway in terms of that, that obviously had nothing directly to do with the Rapids. Brendan, I don't know if you've heard anything. Everything that we've gotten from both sides that we've spoken to is they were open to discussing, but there's nothing official. And I think Jordan Angeli knows enough about how things work at the Rapids above her to know there are better people that they can partner with. And having this team long-term being at DSG is probably not the best decision. And that's really the only big concern. Can they get the ownership and can they do it without KSE money? And if they do that, I have no doubt, Brendan, that this is going to succeed eventually for Denver SC.
Yeah, I'll just say that from what I've heard, it sounds at this moment, they're absolutely aiming to be in, have a totally separate entity of ownership model and not be tied to an MLS model like other teams have done. So at this moment, I mean, it's New Year's Eve 2023. So until we find out more officially, that's all I can say. But from what I've heard and what you've heard, it sounds we're hearing similar things where it could be it sounds like it's a no-go with KSE, and they wanted this to be organic. Marketing has been organic. Everything about this has been organic. So to me, the signs point that it will be an organic separate leadership group.
The only thing that I really could see any kind of partnership going on, Brendan, I say this as someone who's in, you know, who's up to date in land development, everything. I've wondered, Brendan, if at some point with all of my connections in utilities and all the backroom deals and everything, could I find out what's going on with the Denver Broncos stadium situation? And is that something that I'd be willing to leak from like a sports? That'd be my biggest scoop ever. That'd be bigger than any rapid scoop I will ever get, probably. But so the only thing that I could think coming up is when they look from a venue standpoint, what are they looking at from a footprint, from a access public transit parking situation? And Mark and I did a pandemic lockdown evergreen episode where we talked about what happens post DSG if the Rapids ever decide to leave Commerce City. And I have a pretty good software I have access to from the day job in addition to Google Earth. And it's the whatever the largest parking lot by footprint that I think is a due southwest of the can, Pepsi Center, Ball Arena, the footprint of DSG fits inside that parking lot. There's a bunch of stuff that would have to happen that have to what they would have to do from a parking standpoint. But so obviously Elitch Gardens is turning into a whole bunch of housing, commercial, and development there. But is there something else that's going on from KSE from a land standpoint to where that gets involved? Or if the only other thing that I could think of, and this wouldn't be KSE directly, I guess this would be Mrs. Kroenke via the Waltons ownership with the Denver Broncos, Brendan, of if by the time this does materialize and we're looking at an NWSL soccer specific stadium, are the Broncos in the process of leaving Mile High and leaving that land as well to where then that becomes available? I don't think it's viable given there's an existing soccer stadium. But if you look at the size of the venue from a NWSL standpoint, I think would be attractive for a number of other events that they could have that Mile High otherwise would be just too cavernous for. And then do we see some real estate, some commercial development, some affordable housing, and then obviously a smaller stadium that needs a much smaller footprint and a much smaller parking footprint? That's the only other things where I think really for Denver FC would have to maybe sell their soul away or work with corporate people outside of maybe the vibes that they're going for. I want to touch on college soccer really quickly, Brendan. We already talked on Buffs and CSU, and I don't know, who knows, maybe the Rams moved to the Big 12, at least for college soccer. Braden Norris I see his tweet stuff, and apparently their women's team is absolutely crushing it. But we've got some good news on the DU front, Brendan, and I think particularly for college sports is still so much kind of dependent on the CEO type figurehead that you see. I think this is true for football, basketball. I think increasingly now we're seeing it with soccer. Bruce Arena did it for better part of a decade with UVA. Siggy Smith did it in UCLA. We're seeing that in some of the other markets as well. And I think it's important to look at what's going on the women's side, and really the person who's made the Pioneers men's program what it is also staying.
Yes, Jamie Franks, he signed a new multi-year extension in the spring. And then this year, I mean, he was a big part of, I mean, he's the head coach. He loved his time at DU. And I know he's obviously was instrumental in from year one when he helped reach the College Cup with them, but he's staying. Everybody who he coached this year, they had three preseason All-Americans, and I think all three of them got hurt, actually. But the DU men, despite it all, crushed it. I think they reached this round of 32, another heartbreaking exit, but Jamie Franks is here to stay. Sounds like everybody from DU is going to be back. Nobody got drafted in the super draft. And then on the women's side, they've got a new head coach in Julianne Sitch, and she was the if you right remember, she became the first female coach to win a men's national title. She did that last year in 2022 with University of Chicago. She came to DU this spring. They just fell short of the NCAA tournament, but DU women's soccer is also in a strong spot. So good for the Pios, good for the program, college soccer. It's a great way to watch local talent, men's or women's. And if you like the Bassett Bros, you can go watch Sam again because he'll be back. He's an All-American with Jamie Franks.
And so, he will, Brendan, so next year, so this coming fall, he will be a junior, correct?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Is there any, I'm wondering, I would have thought if he was an
maybe he'll be a senior, but either way, the end goal for next year, national title or bust.
I think that's fair. The one concern that I have on Sam Bassett, I liked what I've seen from him, Brendan, when I've seen him play in games. Summit League obviously doesn't maybe have the same test in terms of talent. I mentioned, I think, on the draft review pod that one of the concerns that I have about Kamani Stewart-Baines is that none of his goals were actually scored against Big Ten opposition. Granted, he got a lot of assists against Big Ten opposition. Worthy. I don't know any other freshman who would have been Big Ten rookie of the year or freshman of the year or anything. I don't know, Brendan, was there anybody good on Indiana? But so I like what I've seen from Sam Bassett. I think he's a very, very good college soccer player. There are a lot of things there that are very similar about what he does to what Cole Bassett does. I think he's distinctly a different player and becoming his own player. He's not necessarily a carbon copy of his older brother, but I do have to wonder, there's a part of me that is a little bit concerned that I've seen this before for players at the DU level who I think are great, I think have MLS potential, and then it doesn't work out. This has happened at the Rapids. This has happened at other teams as well. And so I'm just kind of wondering, like, I feel like there would have been a higher peak for him in his time so far at DU that could have dissuaded that, or we would have seen the Rapids more actively pursue getting him to a homegrown contract. I haven't spoken to Sam Bassett directly. It's been a while since I've checked in with any of the Bassett extended family now that I say that. And so I don't know. We've seen it where these players, where their education is extremely important to them. And maybe that's something that he personally is emphasizing to where it makes sense for him. As Brian Crookham has quoted multiple times to us, Brendan, it's every single one of them is an individual case. And you could have it where every single one of Sam Vine's siblings could be in the Rapids Academy. And every single one of them would have their own independent plan that is not particular to the fact that any of them are related to their older brother, who's now obviously playing in Europe and on the outside of the national team. Just got back into the team as well. I don't know if you saw, listeners, over the festive period, Sam Vines has returned to the starting 11 for Royal Antwerp. So hold off on the selling him to Scandinavia or whatever that's happening next. So that's the one concern that I have. That's the one curiosity, I should say, that I have about Sam Bassett, Brendan, where I've seen this story before and have it not really work out. That being said, he has a whole nother year. There's another year that he could get to. I had no idea who Andre Shinyashiki was 10 months prior to his senior year. So, I'm not hating on Sam. Anything non-Rapids first team related that we want to get to, Brent? Then, okay. I was going on a little bit of a rant before we hit the record button, listeners.
Lead us off with lead us into the Rapids 2023 storylines, Matt.
I mean, just listen, like, 2023, like, WTF. Oh, like, there were so
many... What a cluster.
There were so many crazy things that happened that I think in any other individual year would just be the Rapids MLS WTF moment or WTF storyline of it. And so I was talking, so I think it would be instructive for me to talk about, like, just do like a brief, like, one or two sentences on every single season that I've covered the Rapids and, like, what stands out from that. First year in the press box was 2016. 2016, obviously, Keep Fighting. Paolo Mastroianni, everything that they did, almost could have won the Supporters Shield, could have hosted MLS Cup, came up a little bit short. but that team embodied what Paolo Mastroianni was. But where I'm getting to it, listeners, where there's some loose ends in 2023, all of these other seasons I'm looking at with some level of hindsight, which is then going to inform how I feel about those storylines and everything. Fundamentally, the thing that was disappointing about 2016 that I think we can now say also about 2021 is that it was magical. It was wonderful. We had a lot of absolutely fantastic moments, lots of great memories. But fundamentally, those 2 years that the Rapids outkicked their coverage, they overperformed and they regressed back to the mean. And so a lot of how we feel about the people around that team is we'll always have that year, but it didn't lead to a trophy. And so that was disappointing. You know, I wrote in my Jack Price departure piece, like, we will always have 2021. If Danny Wilson is sold tomorrow, Brendan, I will say we will always have that 2021 version of Danny Wilson. We will always have the Scottish Salmon, but it still feels a little bit hollow. And so as great as 2016 was, at the end of the day, 2017 happened. It was the team got gutted. They were clearly trying to rebuild on the fly. Pablo Mastroianni was the scapegoat. And as a result, he is now much more successful and getting paid more. I don't know if he's getting paid more money, but he has more budget to work with at RSL. So 2016 is in the hindsight. 2017 was a pivot year. We felt really bad. So much about that year is just providing posthumous context onto 2016. 2018 was a continuation of the rebuild. There were too many new players that came in. Some of them worked, some of them didn't. That was a prequel to us understanding that Anthony Hudson was not a very good coach, and that also gave us Eigner Gates, which was a fantastic weird story that we can rehearse and look back on, Brendan, but ultimately became, it expired in terms of at the forefront of our mind as soon as Anthony Hudson was fired in early 2019. 2019 was a chaotic year for the team and up and down on the pitch. But in terms of the off the field noise and everything, the only thing that you really had was the process going through the coaching search. You know, 2 draws, 11 losses to start league play. Anthony Hudson is fired. Obviously, that very famous, you know, soundbite. If there's any one thing that I think is you're going to remember about 2019, you know, it was fighting at the bottom with a bottom group of players. And so then obviously Connor Casey comes in. Kai Kamara was fun. That was the start of the outbreak for Diego Rubio as well. We saw the start of several acquisitions, Brendan, of players that ultimately became important for the 2020 and the 2021 season. And then Robin Fraser coming up. But in terms of like off-field noise, in terms of like the distracting stuff, in terms of like a literal dark cloud descending on training because Max Alves was removed from team activities for possibly gambling and match fixing against it, there was none of that. There was chaos on the field. There was up and downness on the field. But maybe the only thing that really had, Brendan, was the prairie dog plague slightly outside the stadium that affected that one game against Montreal. So I'll remember that that was chaos in a moment, but for the most part, it was between the white lines, between the whistles for 2019. 2020 was chaotic again for a bunch of other reasons, but everything that we have to look, everything in life was chaotic in there. And so I don't know that we can look at the Rapid season individually and say outside of the impacts of the pandemic that it was anything more chaotic in that regard. They got back to the playoffs. Yay, that was fantastic. We saw a lot of resiliency within the organization. We saw, I think, the start of Drew Moore's pivot from what he was as a regular player for the team to then moving on. But so 2020 was chaos for everybody. The Rapids don't stand out in that same regard. Brendan, there are podcasters and there are season ticket holders for other MLS teams who have no idea who Max Alves is, that if they read any of our articles or listen to any podcast about that, would be like, how did I not hear about this? Oh, right, because extra time and nobody else was covering that crazy. But also, like, it was buried in all of the other noise and all the other chaos that was the 2023 season. So we get to 2021. I feel about basically everything that I said about 16-17, I say about 2021, 2022. But like looking at it now, Brendan, more than a year after the 2022 season ended, like there's individual games that stick out. There's individual moments for players and everything. But like other than that, it was just like it was one big blur of mediocrity. If there's anything that really stands out for me, I think the beginning of the end of that Rapids team was like, in hindsight, was probably that 4th of July game against Austin. They were up 2-0 and they ended up losing the game 3-2. But like there are individual games, there are individual moments. I could sit here and I could do a rundown right now from epic games from 2016, from disastrous results in the first year of Anthony Hudson, from the 2021 season that just stick out in my mind. And just there's so many 2022 doesn't stick out in that regard. And so where I'm getting this now, listeners, is that every single one of those seasons, like some of them were mediocre, some of them didn't matter, some of them needed further context, some of them had WDF moments and everything. Like, I don't know if you've seen, Brendan, I got a couple joke gifts. I went to a bunch of white elephants when I was home this past week and everything, and I saw one of the picked up on my the algorithm showed me that, like, you can buy like a famous book, but then the cover, if it has people on it, is replaced with cats, and then all of the text in the middle is replaced with just the word meow. So like you could get like so you could get like Harry Potter, the cat, and the Philosopher's Stone, and it has the same number of pages and the same number of words per page, but it's just meow, 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 meow. And so it's just like but instead of that, it's just chaos after chaos after chaos, on the field, off the field, in press conferences, after training and everything. Like, there was nothing, like, in a season that happened 3 years after a global pandemic, there was nothing normal about the 2023 season. There was nothing stable about it, and there was nothing good about it. There's been turbulent moments. There's been turbulent seasons. The word of the 2023 season for the Colorado Rapids was turbulence. So, Brendan, where do you want to start? Because, like, there's, like, the fact that, I would love to have had like a live discussion, Brendan, of the Burgundy Waves 2023 Rapids Press Corps Awards and like have people debate what was going to be the storyline. And I looked this up because I couldn't remember what it was because there were so many first place votes for different things. The winner ended up being the Max Alves investigation, and the C-38 boycott from the September game against the Revolution ended up coming in second place. But like, you could have gotten us all in a room together and like someone could have made an actually like coherent and compelling argument for the MLSPA investigation with the player grievance due to the pitch situation, like all of the crazy weather games and everything. Like, I don't know that there was a 3-game period at any point this season that was quote unquote normal. And I think that's really the inspiration behind that. Was why when you texted me about the idea, I was like, okay, we have to do this podcast because I have to get this out for group therapy purposes and then just never get to talk about never. So I never have to talk about it again. But Brendan, I've been talking a lot.
Ladies and gents, Matt Pollard just cooked 2023 and his entire tenure on the beat. So,
I cooked it, Brendan, but it was also like it's like one of those meals that like Bender serves to the humans in Futurama, where it's like I didn't intentionally do this. I'm not trying to kill all humans. I'm not trying to kill all Rapids fans. But like, there's arsenic in this thing by accident because there's so many other like the Krabby Patty poison burger when the fake health inspector comes in has less going on in it than this stew of turbulent chaos that is my depiction of this 2023 Rapid season.
All right. 100%. 100%. So I think we can both agree. For me, the theme of the 2023 season was unquestionably the badge, the players, the fans deserve better. Bravo, C-38, because when they reached that breaking point in mid-September, that made national news. That was one of the MLS's probably finest genuine protests in like the best possible way. I mean, hundreds of you guys walked out versus New England. The banners were omnipresent throughout decision day. Shoot, even the mayor got involved. And also, Matt, the new mayor, Steve Douglas, just followed me on Twitter the other night. So that was fun. Maybe he saw my
article. DM him. Get scoops, Brendan.
Yeah, that's right.
Pass those scoops on to me. Don't send them to Braden.
Yeah, he does have a crazy job to do now with the Rapids. But the theme of the year for me was that. The story of the year was Max. But, like, I mean, shoot, Matt, we haven't even mentioned the fact that, like, there were 6 games that were postponed. I mean, I had viral tweets that went viral because the weatherheads found it and they're like, wow, this is really cool. I'm like, well, this is just an average night of the Rapids game. Somebody stormed the pitch in the middle of a lightning storm and it's just 2023. I mean, what do you expect? This season was so weird and so much happened. I mean, like, it was so chaotic that, like, there's honestly, this is impossible where to break down of what the hell happened, but like, this was the weirdest season and the most disastrous season in club history. And to cover it all was a beautifying mess, but I loved writing about it because it was so much drama. So much drama. Loved it.
I think there was a point, Brandon, a few years ago, this was pre-COVID, and I was asked by somebody who worked for the club whether or not I cared about whether or not the Rapids won. And I said, functionally, in terms of how I do my job, the enjoyment and the process that I go through reporting on the team, no. Because you could have MLS Invincibles win the treble, beat three Mexican teams in between Champions League and League Cup in order to win that. You could have this. You could have the season that Messi and Inter Miami are probably going to have in 2024. And I think there are as many humanizing and interesting and nuanced stories to tell, things to comment on, little tidbits, moments of humanity, Ted Lasso style, that you can depict from that year, as you could have from a season where just everything goes horribly wrong. Everything bad that could possibly happen could have there. And even then, there's little like, we haven't even mentioned that Robin Fraser got fired and it wasn't his fault and he didn't deserve it. And he doesn't have a head coaching job anymore because of the stank of the Rapids that are following him around through all of these interviews. And he's going to end up being an assistant announced mid-season to the LA Galaxy next year after his youngest daughter starts, you know, enrolls at UCLA. And then in a year and a half, when Greg Vanney's finally fired, Robin's going to get the LA Galaxy job and fully deserve it. Like, we haven't even, you know, we haven't even talked about that.
I know. Like,
but so there's little moments that are just like fantastic in that regard. And so regardless of how bad the season was, Brendan, like, there was a really humanizing arc in terms of me, albeit maybe I'm at fault here, leading the charge of the Darren Yapi hype train, him not scoring a goal for the first team at all, but then
I was on the train.
Yeah, but then I would argue the most viral photo, other than maybe Columbus lifting back-to-back trophies there in Next Pro, was the photo that Mark Shaik and Burgundy Wave and Last Word on Soccer Photog got of the close-up shot. It's in what we now refer to as his Dombaji spot, Brendan. I don't know if you remember the spot where he got Dombaji scoring the goal against the Rapids, then putting up a little heart. There's a spot that he likes to stand from that angle, and so it's in that exact spot and everything. And the club's used that photo, and it's gone viral, and it like imperfectly encapsulated that. And he says afterwards, you know, I've got, like, it destroyed all of my confidence. I had nothing left from what this season had and everything. Like, there's little moments in that. Now, none of that matters if Darren Yapi then doesn't score a goal next year for the first team. But, like, there's, you know, there were little moments of that. Regardless of what Lalas Abubakar was on the field, him being open and up to talk about Ramadan, and I think now that being in the public consciousness of the MLS space, when Ramadan comes around and the Apple TV broadcasters start to talk about that rule and everything, there are all of those little moments that got
completely... We waited until 1:30 in the morning to talk to Diego Rubio after leaks.
There's so many things that otherwise would be like the, like, if Eigner Gate had happened in this season, Brent, if, you know, let's say, I don't know if I want to pick on a player. If Robin Fraser had that with another player, and it wasn't Navajo or Tavares, because they were, you know, the two of the big hype signings to come in the summer, and it wasn't Diego Rubio and it wasn't Jack Price and everything, like, I can't see that being bigger than what Eigner Gate was. And also, it just would have straight been buried. Like, if he, okay, I'll mention him now because we know it never would have happened, and he's also no longer a player anymore. If Eigner Gate had happened during the start of that bad run in the middle of May between Robin Fraser and Steven Betisher, that does not get on, that does not get a vote. That does not get on the top 10 WOTF moments or anything. That was the number one thing from the 2018 Rapids season that, like, sticks out to me in 30 years when I'm still doing this podcast and talking about, like, Matt, what do you remember about 2018? Hudson came in, they got a bunch of players, some of them sucked, there were too many changes, and Eigner Gate happened, and it was a horrible mess, and the club handled it poorly, and Eigner was a jerk, and also Anthony Hudson, like, is bad at player management and everything, and he could have done something better in that regard. And Eigner, you know, whisked off on a, you know, a midnight international flight on not Luftwaffe, because I know I always mix up these two, Brendan. Lufthansa is the airline. I was talking to the two times that I've been in Germany, and I've met another American in market, and we were talking about what we were doing in our itineraries and everything. We asked what airline you flew on, and in my brain I said Lufthansa, but I said out loud Luftwaffe. And one of those, and so, two of those Americans were a couple who were at Dachau with their daughter, and they were Holocaust survivors. And I basically wanted to get a shovel and bury myself on the ground right there, because I said, like, yes, I took Luftwaffe here to Regensburg, and then now we are going to, and then now we are at Dachau. Dachau was a work camp. They didn't actually have Jews there, but they're bad stuff. Google it if you want, listeners. You know about the Holocaust, and you know about the internment camps. You know about Irvin Makfry. In any case, that was a really dark corner that we took, Brennan. But so, like, Eignergate would have gotten buried in this season. Oh, yeah. The Prairie Dog Plague game would have gotten, I guess that would have been a footnote in addition to all of the Lightning games. But, like, all the Lightning games blur together at this point, Brennan. The only... Oh, yes.
100%.
I'll remember the Vancouver one because I wrote an article specifically about the timeline of what that went like, and I use that now as my barometer. Here's what it's like being in an MLS game during a rain delay for a game that ultimately doesn't happen. I believe that was also the game where William Yarbrough came out at, you know, quarter to midnight, full kit, thank the players. But, like, the only one that's going to stand out...
Portland, for me, that's the one that stands out.
Portland's the one that's going to stand out from all of the others.
Well, that's the one that stood out because I didn't make the 45-minute second game, but I did make the July 4th game, and my dad was in the stands, and since it was delayed, I'm like, come up and see where I work. So we got a photo together, and Rapids comm staff weren't too happy about that, but you know what? It was a great moment for posterity, and now I'm off the beat, so it's great. Totally fine.
Yeah.
But yes, that's, and then, oh yes, of course, how could we forget? I mean, I remember watching this on the broadcast, the iconic moment between Gio and Robin of what a total waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, shit.
Yeah.
Iconic.
I mean, the other stuff right now for me, Brennan, in terms of what's going to stick in my mind from a historical standpoint for 2023, there's still a lot of loose ends. Like,
Jack leaving,
yeah,
Ada and Diego out.
Yeah. So the key departures, I think the how we feel about that, the postmortem, I'm totally fumbling with, like, the word on, like, the jury's still out on those moves, because those players could end up being the particularly for Rubio and for Price, the injuries could be so significant that they never come back to what they were, say, summer of 2022, for example, and certainly not 2021. And then maybe the Rapids, you know, are, you know, bringing a player that is certainly relevant from that standpoint. You know, it was really hard to, or no. It was easier to move on from Kai Kamara when you saw what he's done at the other clubs since then, which is something that he had done at the clubs prior to the Rapids, and also with what Diego Rubio was able to do sans him and what the Rapids were able to do attacking-wise when they weren't dependent on Kai Kamara. So I still think the jury's out on what does that void look like in terms of Jack Price's departure. Obviously significant in terms of his tenure with the club coming to the end, but maybe they end up getting a good replacement. You know, I was really sad at the time, Brendan, about Sam Cronin leaving the club. And that was easier to get over when he goes to Minnesota, has issues with concussions, and then basically fades out. I think that 2018 season, or 2017 or 2018, was probably... I feel very confident, having not looked at his Wikipedia page in the last 3 years, that Sam Cronin was not playing soccer in MLS as of 2019. So in hindsight, and you replace him then with Jack Price, that's easier to feel about in that regard. But, like, ironically, I think the biggest story and the two that are going to stick most in my mind that stand out, that were my one and two vote for story of the year, and got the Rapids in the zeitgeist. Brendan, you know how irrelevant you know how chaotic everything that was going on around the club and how irrelevant the club was on the pitch in this season, when there are so many ways in which the Rapids penetrated the zeitgeist of greater MLS despite being terrible, or penetrated the Denver sports, Denver media space, or got covered somewhere nationally or internationally with how much wonkiness was happening. Like, the, you know, like whether Twitter caught on to what you were covering when Chris Bianchi had too much stuff to cover in that regard. Like, the outlets that cover Arsenal based in London covered the boycott because it was an easy click to say Rapids fans are mad at Stan Kroenke. Like, I'm sorry, Max Alves got international coverage as well. Eignergate, Brendan, was not a term that people are Googling or people are saying outside of the 303 area. And if it is, it's people who've specifically talked to me and heard that term as well. People know about what went on with Max Alves. They know about what went on with the boycott. They know about what went on with the crazy weather stuff. The fact that the Rapids, one of those games was moved because of a hurricane and then a tropical storm involving LAFC, who were MLS Cup champions at the time, certainly helped in that regard. But where it's the where this season is still going to stick in the mind is just like how many other things that weren't the team that were wild and crazy and that other people glommed on to in the absence of actually caring or following the team because of its irrelevance. But so the two that I'm still uncertain about is what the heck's going on with Max, with a lot of these Brazilian outlets, I'd say at least half of which I'm not taking at face value, Brendan. And then the other one for me, well, I'll say that there's a third one as well. We're going to get a good post-mortem on Robin Fraser's stock, I think, is either going to go up or go down, depending on what happens afterwards on this. And I think still, I think Rapids fans know how they feel about Porrick Smith and everything. But like, if the team is as bad this coming year as it is last year and everything, like, I've been saying for months that the person most responsible for the failures on the field of 2023 was Porrick Smith. And I think most of the fan base is with me on this. And if there's anybody who's still detracting on that, I think we're going to get answers to those questions in 2024. But then what's going on with the boycott? Because I don't know, Brendan, you tell me if you've heard any differently. I'm not convinced that ownership is changing their approach or the way that they operate off of what happened on the field or what happened off the field in that regard. And so I think, unfortunately, the thing that's going to be, you know, that photo is going to stick in my mind. It is going to get recycled through of the various shots of the banners from that September night. And then from the games that followed as well, is that I think ultimately, I think the impact could very well be zilch because of just how KSC operates and where the Rapids are in that landscape. And I think, unfortunately, but then
also just real quick, from an MLS wide perspective, I feel like the MLS community, that was probably one of the more nationally respected protests in the history of the league from a fan protest standpoint of where they understand it. Even if it, in the long run, you're right, it doesn't really bring the difference that they're saying. But from a national perspective, I think, like, from a all-time MLS fan protest perspective, that will go down and will be remembered. As you're saying, those images from that September night will be recirculated again and again and again. So continue.
But ultimately, it'll be completely irrelevant, Brendan. So I've been listening to I listened to a podcast series that covers historical events. And so they didn't do an episode on Christmas. For the week of Christmas, they covered the Christmas truce from World War One.
World War One.
Yes. And so it's a functionally, in terms of the grand scheme of the Great War, Brendan, it was completely irrelevant because for the overwhelming majority of the soldiers who were involved in that spontaneous, non-coordinated, varying experience and everything, stuff returned to normal by dusk on Christmas Day, if not Boxing Day and everything. And so it's this wonderful footnote with a few photos, a few stories, some romanticism and hyperbole around there. If we look at the Sainsbury's ad from a couple of years ago, where they take some creative licensing and some Hollywoodification of that. But so it's a nice moment for something that ultimately didn't move the needle. And this was a brutal struggle that was wrought with death and everything and took many more years in order to get sorted out, Brendan. And so I'm worried that we're going to think sentimentally from that standpoint, oh, that was a good job by the supporters. That was something to where the Rapids fan base got respect in the other media standpoint. If it doesn't lead to change in operations from an ownership standpoint, then ultimately it was all for naught. And I think, unfortunately, ownership knows that they can wait this out. And if the team's hovering around ninth next year, then it'll roll down. And it took so much. Like, I can't emphasize this enough as someone who's in deep with a few of the guys at C38 of, like, in past years when things have been bad, or when it's been good year, bad year, rebuild, 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 of, you know, how much, like, internal debate about, we can't even get on the same page about how we feel about the state of the club or the direction it's going. We can't get on the same page about what we want to go about doing this. And then finally, like, all of those bickering, all of those debating people were finally in agreement. This is so bad. We have to do something. This is an effective way we as a group can do it. And leadership was unified and the fan base was unified. And like, I don't know a lot of people, Brendan. There are people who have renewed their season tickets. There are people who chose to wear black, go to the tailgate, who wanted to stay and support the team. So there's varying views about how do we protest in a way that shows that we are against the front office in the org chart and up, but ways that does not alienate the players on the pitch. And there's a nuanced conversation about that. I don't know, outside of that one guy who was looking to move the banner and then it quickly got put back up, that, like, I don't know that there's, like, who here, if we were to do Twitter polls on, you know, at Brendan Plone, at LWS Matt Pollard, HDHL, Burgundy Wave and everything, like, for boycott, against boycott, completely thought that, like, it'd be 95-5 at best in terms of lack of support of that. You know, it'd be an overwhelming majority. And so, like, we're going to romanticize about that. But if it doesn't lead to any change, I think, unfortunately, something more drastic is going to have to happen. And I don't know what that looks like, Brendan, unless you go full DC Ultra Screaming Eagles of just straight up not showing up to games. Do you tailgate in the area? Do you move the tailgate somewhere else to, like, show the absence of the impact that you have and everything? Or is this just going to have to be a gradual decay of season ticket numbers and revenue? And then even then, is that really going to move, you know, the needle and everything? I was at, PIDsmas and everything. I want to be clear, listeners. I do not condone this. If you do this, you are not a member of the Rapids community. Holding the High Line will no longer accept your money and everything. Brendan, if Rapids fans were to January 6th DSG at the home opener next year, that would get a response from ownership and from the league. Again, do not do that. I would not support that. But so I'm wondering, Bars. There's a boundary between what was done last year and then something drastic, Brendan, which is bordering on violence and destruction of property and something very, very horrible that is inhumane and beneath us. And there's a space in the middle of what do you go about doing that. And if things don't change, I have to think that then C38 is going to have to do that. And was September 21st, 2023, lightning in the bottle to have that, that ultimately isn't going to affect anything in the ways that the lightning in the bottle of one German soldier yelling across the trench to a Brit, and then they meet in the middle, and then a spontaneous pickup soccer game happens, and they take a photo of them getting haircuts because one of them knows their own barber and everything. And this will be a fun thing that we romanticize around an event that was ultimately functioning around death and destruction and pain and the lack of an ability to rise above that and lead to change. I realize that I'm comparing the Colorado Rapids to a world war right now. That's not lost on me, listeners. But no, like, are we going to have that moment? But then, because we had Eignergate, Brendan, and the thing that moved on from that was that a player left, and the head coach was fired, and they brought in better players and better coaches and a better culture to where an Eigner gate would never happen. I don't know that things are in motion now to where another C38 boycott would be avoided or head off, let alone addressing the actual causes of that, not the actual symptoms. And so that is something that is carrying over for me. You know, Max could get, the Rapids could buy out Max tomorrow, and that would end that discussion. That would then be something that I look at distinctly in the past. But this is something from 2023 that's lingering over for me in ways that all the other stuff, I want to be like, that was type 2 fun as a sicko and a Rapids media masochist that I never want to live through again.
Yeah, no, that's 100% spot on. But also say, like, covering it and with everybody on press row at the time and seeing how, like, the impact that it got felt like profound, and it feels like it will be a, to me, the home opener will be just so, oh my gosh, just so fascinating on so many levels to see what transpires throughout the year. And it's going to be 100% one of the storylines to follow for 2024. But 2023, it left a profound impact on the state of the club, and it stuck with players, it stuck with management, it stuck with upper management, and it stuck with media members. Yeah. And to me, like, kudos, because it takes real courage to do that. And no matter what happens in 2024, the seed has been planted with where things are right now. And whatever happens in the future, great, but there's now a precedent for something bigger to grow out of it. And hopefully it's a positive change.
Yeah. Does 2024 become a scar that gradually fades over time, or is it a wound that still needs healing in ways that I feel like the Hudson era, we're far enough away from that, Brendan, and that's been enough healed and overturned and everything, that is now a scar. There's still a lot of wounds from 2023 that 2024 and potentially beyond are going to have to address. I don't have a lot of answers in terms of how that's going to look. But at the same time, I want nothing more than to move on from everything that happened from this year. And I think, unfortunately, some of this stuff is still very much going to haunt us, given the outstanding, the loose ends on all of these crazy storylines in this turbulent soup that was 2023. We're a little early to talk about that, Brendan, but first of all, anything that you want to say now that you're leaving the Denver Post, and given that you're now no longer on the beat, and any tea that you want to spill here as an HDHL exclusive?
Ooh, let's see here.
Favorite player to interview. Person associated with the Colorado Rapids. Most excited to never have to directly interact with again.
Probably somebody, one of the younger players on the team, because like I cover preps a lot. And honestly, high school players, when they're passionate, have better answers than some of the younger homegrowns on the team.
I need a name, Brendan. Is it Sebi or is it Ollie?
Neither.
Neither?
No.
Is it Darren? Is it Darren Yappy?
Yaps. Listen, you're young, you'll grow. He wasn't not my favorite, but it was just like, all right, you know, his answers were kind of really brief, and which was fair. I get it. We're all teens, but I hope Yappy will grow into his media training.
Okay. Any tea that you want to spill, or any things you want to pour out for Denver Post or any of your stuff now that you're leaving journalism, Brendan?
Thank you.
The floor is yours.
Yes. Thank you so much to the readers and to the listeners and to everybody. Whoever read a single story of mine, my editors, really appreciate you guys because I definitely poured my heart into this. It's a beat that I actually wanted to have since I was a teenager. Like, covering pro soccer at a major metro newspaper was actually something that I wanted to do. And to be the guy, it was so much better than I could have ever imagined. Even with the chaos, I mean, like, I loved every single day of the job, and working with all you guys was great. And every player that I interviewed, even, yes, Darren Yappy, you are all awesome, awesome people. Everybody at the club, I know it's a tough job, but y'all mean well too. And I just am really, really thankful for my 2 years. You know, there's always something to be grateful for, and for me, it's covering the greatest sport with the greatest people on press row, and 2 years that I will never, ever forget. That is for dang sure. So I'm going out on a positive. I'm a positive person. I think, as crazy as it sounds, the Rapids will be better than expected in 2024. It's not going to be pretty. I know. I predicted seventh this year, so what the heck do I know? So... but I'm going to be an optimist and say, why the hell not? So thank you for everything, Matt. And you've been a terrific, terrific friend. I am also very much open to being a resident or whatever the equivalent of a college professor on extended leave. What's that term again?
Adjunct or sabbatical? It's one of those.
Sabbatical. Things. I'm like open to be doing a sabbatical, a Rapids Away Day sabbatical across the Midwest. So if you need, I'm around. I'm around. Minnesota, St. Louis, Kansas City, and Cincinnati. So I will be around because I've got the journalism bug, guys. What can I say? I love newspapers and news, and it's going to be hard to leave the beat. But that being said, Braden Nurse, who's taken over, is absolutely going to crush it. He's a senior, graduating senior at CSU. He was on the beat last year. You're going to love him. I mean, he's just really, really, really insightful. Always love to learn. And I have no doubt the beat is in a great spot.
Excellent stuff, Brendan. I think we'll leave it there. You got a standing invitation if you ever want to write something for Burgundy Wave. And I'm sure, well, this is your fifth cap for holding the high line. I doubt it will be your last. So we'll see what's going on with that. But okay, I'm banging the gavel here. Listeners, 2023 is dead. We'll never speak of this again. It never happened. We're all denying that it was even here and everything. We're moving on. 2024 starts now. Chris Armas era and everything. Brendan, you kind of like, you had a similar arc to you were being a little Ted Lasso-y there, moving home, dealing with family stuff, changing career stuff and everything. But so hereby it now, 2023 is dead. And hopefully, other than the outstanding topics and everything, we're never going to talk about this ever again. It didn't happen. And hopefully the concerns that I have about lingering effects from this past year are sorted and then become a posthumous thing that we look back on and then chuckle and move on from and be better for it, or better in spite of it in more cases with that. All right, listeners, that's it. If there's not any breaking news, Zach Seven doesn't sign, don't expect to hear from us the rest of this week on Holding the High Line. Peace.